Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking about the continued fallout from the report, the Mother and Baby Home Commission report. And I feel worn out by it myself, and I'm not even directly impacted. But Martin, it must have been harder for people again today to see some of the carry on in the Dáil.
Well, it was. I mean, and it was. I think the best word for it is duplicitous, Tony. It was a duplicitous move on the part of the government. The motion passed, but they're not going to do anything about it.
Well, look, first of all, just for the benefit of listeners, we are delighted to be joined by Siobhan, who is a mother from a mother and baby home. She is one of the 549 people who gave their testimony to the confidential committee and had to put up with the, we've deleted it, we can't get it back. Sure, why should you get it back? We think it should be done in that thing. And then, you know, lo and behold, just when legal action was threatened, it came back. But before we go to Siobhan, I just do want to just touch on what happened today in terms of the Soc Dems used their time. As we spoke to yesterday with Jennifer Whitmore from the Soc Dems, they put a motion on the floor of the Dáil to extend the commission by a year so people like Siobhan can have more time to actually go through these 3,000 pages, see where the gaps are, because there are a lot of gaps, have this actually done in the fullest and actually have a real sort of truth telling and some form of reconciliation. And we have to look at aspects of where criminality was involved and all of the other wider issues. But if that doesn't happen and it simply dissolves in a couple of days' time, a lot of that just goes away, and the opportunity for that is just compounding the state's own cruelty on top of trauma, on top of historic cruelty. So, look, without further ado, Siobhan, do you want to just give us, our listeners, a kind of idea about your own process in terms of who you are and what you told the committee?
Okay, I gave my evidence to the confidential committee in 2017, and I would like to say that it took me the best part of a year and a half to 2 years before I could actually get an interview with them. I had a cat and mouse game with the witness liaison person who I am, as I was living in England at the time, who kept telling me, oh, we're not over there in that part of England, oh, we can't interview you. And I did ask her to come back to me as soon as they knew they'd be in England so I could be interviewed. And for months I'd hear nothing, and then I'd ring again and the same thing had happened. But between the reels and the jigs, it took a long time to actually get that interview. And then when I did get that interview, the day of the confidential committee, I brought a good friend with me. And we sat down, and within the first minute, I was asked, would I be happy with my interview being recorded? Now, they did have what looked to me like an old-fashioned tape recorder on the table. And I said, yes, you can record my testimony giving as long as I can have a copy of it. And they said, no, you can't have a copy of it. And I asked them why. And they said, because there could be court cases. And I said, really, court cases? And they said, yes, but we don't think you're one of those people. So I did think that was quite a surprising way to start the interview. But at no time did they actually say to me, we're going to destroy this tape on you now. They never said that. And the other thing about the interview was that I did in advance prepare a testimony with Hogan Lovells, who did work with a lot of survivors to put their testimonies together. So I already had this typed 11 pages with me, and I did go to the trouble of looking at the terms of reference on the internet, and the solicitors had advise me the kind of questions I'd be asked or I should be asked. But the actual reality was very different when I got there and started giving my evidence. For example, when I started talking about the conditions in the home. Now, I was in a home in the 1980s. I wasn't like some of those poor other women that were there a long time before me. I was in the 80s. And when I started to say that at heavily pregnant at 9 months, I was expected in this Georgian house to, on bended hands and knees, clean this, well, scrub the stairs with this old-fashioned tin bucket, boiling hot water, and an old-fashioned scrubber that you'd see in some film from Charles Dickens. I was expected to do that at 9 months pregnant. And my memory of that experience was that the more pregnant I got, the bigger I got. And I actually couldn't see my feet. So when I was trying to perch myself on this, in this three-story house, Denny house, I actually couldn't see below me. And because I was so fat at 9 months, I could easily have fallen down the stairs. And I had this terrible fear I was going to fall down the stairs and I'd just be left there. And when I started to describe that in the commission of the confidential committee, and by the way, me describing the conditions in the home was the third part of their terms of reference. Like, one of them was, how did you end up in the home? And one of the next ones was, what were the conditions? I was shut down when I started saying all that. And they said, we don't need to hear that. And I said, but why don't you need to hear it? And they said, we don't need to hear that because we already know. And I said, well, do you already know from people in the 80s? And they said, yes, we do. We don't need to hear that. And I said, so you can assure me that other people in the 80s have told you this and you don't need to be hearing this. And they said, yes, that's true. I said, Grant, the reason I'm saying this now is because when I actually did see the report itself, that wasn't in the report. There was no testimony from that home, no evidence testimony. So what they were trying to do was shut me down. And when, during that 2 hours of testimony giving, and you have to realize that was the first time I'd ever talked about my experiences. So it was very traumatic for me to basically relive them all again. And what they kept doing was they kept saying, but what did your parents do? What, how did you end up there? Was there nobody in your family came to see you? All this kind of stuff. And they kept saying, well, how did you end up out of there? So the majority of that interview of mine, and I've spoken to another friend and she said the same thing, the majority of that interview of mine was stage managed. There's no other word. They wanted certain information out of me about how I ended up in there and how I left there. They didn't want to know about the conditions in the 1980s. They didn't want to know what that mother and baby home was like for me, a pregnant teenager, or what that was like for me not being allowed to look after my son and him lying in the cot screaming his head off and not being washed or fed or looked at. They didn't want to know. They didn't want to know that I was under constant coercion from that home. And they,
Siobhan,
had,
can I ask, are you, first of all, when you went in, you felt very much that their objective was to avoid litigation, or it was litigation evasion or litigation avoidance. Yes. And they were looking for a certain dialogue from you, which was about a societal view and not about what the homes themselves did. And then your mistreatment, they didn't want to record that. Is that correct?
That's absolutely 100% correct.
And then do you feel that what they have recorded is correct, that even that limited statement, that stage managed statement you gave, do you believe that that is correctly recorded within the commission?
It's not. I still haven't got my transcript to answer that question. 32 days later after my subject access request, still don't have that. So I can't answer that one. But what I can answer you is, if you go to the report, I'm in the report twice. And guess what chapters I'm in? I'm in the 1980s, pregnancy and how people ended up in the home, that chapter in the confidential committee. And I'm also in the exit and aftermath. wasn't surprised. I knew when I found my first testimony, I knew where to look to see was I in it a second time, and there I was. And even that was misrepresented in the report. It was just shocking the level of misrepresentation, inaccuracies, incorrect information, that basically blamed my family and took all the blame off the home, and talked about these social workers like they came out of the sky. Didn't say what adoption society they came from. Didn't say, in the confidential committee. Didn't actually even say I was in Denny House. Didn't say any of those very important details. And it just literally cut and paste and butchered my personal testimony to fit a narrative. It even went as far as it had asked me questions to do with my life today, like in the last 10 years, which really has nothing to do with their terms of reference. And it even managed to put that in as well, but pretend that happened in the mother and baby home.
So it's been misrepresented. It was badly taken. It was the pretenses. Well, the way it was structured was in a way that you feel was not representative of the entirety of the context of how you ended up in the mother and baby home, your treatment within the mother and baby home, and your subsequent life afterwards. And it seems to have been. Yeah. And the fact, though, Siobhan, strikes me that you could identify yourself so clearly in a report that is supposed to be confidential and without kind of people being able to look at it and put their hand on it and say this reveals who this person is. Did you find that shocking?
No, I didn't. And I'll actually give it to them. They did say you will recognize yourself in the report if you're included. They did actually say that.
I think
could I just add? There's somebody representing me at the moment. Niall Meehan is actually representing me at the moment to the commission, and he's in an ongoing battle with them about my representation in the report. And even though there's 14 identifying factors in one paragraph to do with me, the commission is now saying it's not me. 14 identifying factors. How many other people have 14 identifying factors, down to years, down to gender, everything? Like it's even now they're trying to whitewash us.
Siobhan, we can very clearly hear your frustration at the way this is going. The commission is going to dissolve in a couple of days. How does that make you feel?
It just makes me so upset. It's bad enough that they lied about telling us they were going to destroy our tapes. They lied about us giving consent. Then they lied about the fact that they couldn't find them, or they didn't know where they were, or whatever it was. And then, and now, even though I and many other people have took the courage into our hands and given statements to detectives, and in my situation, the detectives were very sympathetic, and that was very difficult. I had another 2 hours of having to give more personal testimony and information, and that was all around because the tapes were destroyed. And so that's a case. And I also have given evidence to the Data Protection Commission, and they have been trying, and I mean trying, on my behalf for the last few weeks to get an amicable resolution out of the commission. And up until yesterday, when I, out of total frustration, CC'd in the minister and the Data Protection Commission into an email, they suddenly responded. They suddenly responded. And the reason I'm saying that is my case with the Data Protection Commission and with the Gardaí will die. It'll be gone when that commission disappears. Nobody will be brought to account. They will disappear into the sunset. There is serious data protection breaches in them destroying our tapes without our consent, without giving us a transcript, without us seeing whether that testimony was accurate, without seeing what they were putting in the report was accurate. Like, there's very serious questions to answer here, apart from Article 31 and 34, where you're not allowed to destroy any evidence during the lifetime of a commission before it's dissolved. That's actually a criminal case, and that's what the Gardaí investigation is. But it's like, this commission is absolutely above the law. And even today, even yesterday, the commission came out and spoke. For the first time, it spoke. And what did it have to say? It had to say that the recovery of our tapes is not morally or legally right. That shouldn't happen. They don't have moral authority over me or over the other survivors. It's our testimony. It's our truth. And I feel they have treated us appallingly and have re-traumatized so many people, so many survivors. I have suddenly been in touch with so many survivors and spoken to so many people that are so unbelievably distressed. And it shouldn't have happened. We should have had an accurate report. We should have been represented properly and reflected appropriately, but we weren't. And every week there's a number of things that has been done to us since that report has come out, and everybody is deeply distressed by what has been done and the damage they have done.
Even before the report came out, this is what's sort of makes things even a bit worse. Because if you understand, just simply remember as far back as October, when they were able to extend the commission because they wanted to. And now when there's a motion on the floor at all to extend the commission, they don't want to. So they don't seem to want to play ball with it. Now, I'd love to think that they'll do the right thing and they'll come back with their own their own counter bill where they'll actually do it. But I mean, you're shaking your head, Siobhan. You don't share my optimism on that.
There's absolutely no way they are going to be held to account. There's no way that commission are going to do the right thing by survivors. There's no way they're going to undergo due process. There is no way they are going to facilitate an investigation from the Gardaí or the Data Protection Commission. As I said, the Data Protection Commission has been struggling to get them to an amicable resolution with me. After 30 days, like, there is no way they are going to cooperate. And I just feel there is so much contempt and arrogance in that commission against us survivors. And I just think it's like I'm back a teenager again in a mother and baby home, and they're telling me what I should do. And if I had listened to them and what they want me to do now, and they still think we're these vulnerable people that have no voice and they can just treat us the way they want to treat us. And it's shocking. They will disappear off into the sunset and not be made accountable.
Siobhan, what is the way forward? What should happen now?
What should happen is the Minister O'Gorman should absolutely make his intention public to vote that commission is extended, and the government, who have the majority vote, should vote to extend that commission. There's a saying, evil persists when good men do nothing. And I really think that statement is very relevant here, that if you collude with illegality, or you collude with the breaking of the law or the denial of people, of survivors' rights, and if you collude with misrepresentations of them in a legal document that's in the public domain forever, you have to ask very, very strong questions of yourself and your morality. And the commission talk about morality. What about the government's morality if they do not vote to extend this commission. There's no reason why they haven't come up with a good reason for why they can't extend that commission. And it is the right and just thing to do.
I think that's a really, really powerful point you've just made, and I don't think it could be put any better. If you know, doing nothing is tacit approval. That is, you don't even need to be actively colluding. Just simply sitting there like they did today in the Dáil and sat there and watched that go through, knowing that they could vote against, have the numbers. That is collusion. If we were in this scenario, though, where we look at this, do you think that there is at least the framework for some form of, because we keep coming back to this, the fact that people have been denied justice still, and people are also then being denied any form of recompense, be that compensation, being that other support, being other wraparound things, and the government are saying, well, we have to do this thing because then we can get to the healing phase or whatever nonsense they've been carrying on. It hasn't been survivor centric. You've made that quite clear. That has not happened now. But do you feel that there's also been, like, I mean, have there been any attempts to talk to you guys in terms of what you actually need in terms of supports, be them emotional, financial, you know, all of those things? Has there been anything done in that regards?
Well, I can't talk for other people because I'm not part of a group. I can say personally, I have talked to the minister twice, and he has given me a lot of time, and he has listened to my opinions. And the first time I spoke to him, I was quite upset, and his private secretary did offer for me to be put through to one of their counselling services to deal with all of this. So I can only say personally from that, and he did say to me that people who went into the homes after 1973, they would be looking at getting them redressed as well, that those recommendations in the report are not static. So I don't know. I just feel what this whole thing has done is re-traumatized to everybody. And I think it's opened up a festering wound and made it much, much bigger. And people are now struggling much more than they were before there was ever any report.
Do you mind me asking, and you don't have to answer this, we can cut it out. What year did you leave the mother and baby home system?
Let me think.
89. I would have been 10 going on 11. I just want to say that for the benefit of listeners as well, because we keep making on as if some of this is, you know, it happened in another Ireland. That was another Ireland.
That's not historic. That's very, very recent. It really is very, very recent. Siobhan, we can feel how they've re-traumatized you with this, and we are very sorry that they have done that. We think it's time to be open. It's time to tell that secret history of Ireland. And we'd like to thank you for coming on and having this chat with us.
If people would like to support us, if they go on the Clan Project, Noelle Brown, who was on the Late Late Show, has actually put together an email that people can forward to their TDs before they vote tomorrow. So if you want to support the survivors to extend the commission, that's what you can do. Put the pressure on today. It's the last day for extending the commission.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I think that's what we need to do. I'm not even, Martin, you see how serious it is. I didn't even do a Patreon shout out.
No, we don't. Some subjects are just too serious to do it, Tony. Yeah. They just are. And like, It is. It's just a terrible way to treat people. It just is an awful, awful way to treat people.
And if I could end on one thing, it's not us. It's not we. This is the state that's doing this. There are people like the Clan Project, like people ourselves, who are trying to agitate, be active, and make sure that we say this is not. You do not speak for us if you do this. Absolutely do not, and we reject that totally and utterly. We'll leave it there. Talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin. Martin and-